This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Thursday, 3rd of June, 2021. Pretty quiet session yesterday in the U.S. We've talked about a couple of things recently that are somewhat of a cause for concern, noticing yesterday that there's a lot of disaster insurance buying out there, but also noting it's not a particularly good signal in terms of any timing on that. But we're looking at the technicals today and still noting this very local 13,600 support if we're talking about the NASDAQ 100 index. A bit lower, 13,475, the 21-day moving average. And I put up the Fibonacci's of this latest rally in case we are headed lower. You can see that on slide two. And then the other thing we've talked about recently that is definitely cause for concern, especially for NASDAQ 100, because it's shown the most sensitivity to interest rates. We have this very tight correlation over the last, let's call it month-ish in treasuries and stocks. And that's a concern. Yeah, I noticed yesterday during the first part of the session that we're just moving in lockstep the futures on both the NASDAQ 100 and the treasuries. But Peter, I think another thing that's just, I'm not necessarily think it's a broad risk in any sense for the market, may or may not be, but it's back. And that is the, I don't know if we should call this the stonks trading, but it, certainly these meme stocks, Reddit army type stocks, where we're seeing this type of behavior we saw earlier this year cropping back up. I put up a couple things on options, but take us through your slide here on slide four.
Yeah, thanks, John. So we talked about it already back on Thursday when it was on the move, and we called it our podcast title, The Reddit Army is Back, and it certainly is back. I mean, look at the chart here. I mean, you have AMC Entertainment, which is one of the biggest, if not the biggest owner of movie theaters in the U.S. It's up almost 3,000% this year, and you know, just the last couple of weeks has just been out of this world. Yesterday, as you can see, we traded almost $40 billion in that single instrument. Tesla, which was the second most traded during yesterday's session, was $14.1 billion. And Tesla typically has a lot of speculation going on. And it's also a sizable company. I raved a little bit on my Twitter account yesterday, basically saying, where is the AMC management in all of this? I mean, why are they so silent? I mean, there's a huge misalignment between the company's valuation, which is now close to $40 billion, which is, you know, a factor of 20 times more than it was just 4 years ago for a movie theater. Keep that in mind, right? I mean, we're moving into a digital age and we're talking about movie theaters like it was a growth stocks here, right? If you took the market at face value. And I said, where is this management? And I get the personal gain from being silent. You probably have stock options and everything to win from this. But now I figured out, you know, so the CEO is called Adam Aron, and he's been awfully quiet until the last couple of days, where he's actually taking advantage of the rally in AMC, and he's raising a lot of capital to do more acquisitions, because this apparently is a very superior business long term. And you can probably hear my sarcasm here, because it's a terrible business when you look at it from a free cash flow and return on capital perspective. But the retail investors that have gone into AMC has offered this company a lifeline. I just want to quickly mention as well the Mohammed El Rian, which was the co CIO of PIMCO in the old days, or maybe not so old days, but a couple of years back. And he had written a Bloomberg opinion piece on the whole AMC and GameStop phenomenon. And I don't agree with his one assessment, but the two others, which is the loose monetary policies, just have raked up risk-taking to a level I don't think we have seen maybe since the you know, the late 1920s. And then his second point, or his third point, is actually that, where are the regulators? I mean, I think it's an embarrassment for the U.S. equity markets, plain simple. And I think it's an embarrassment for management. I, as I said internally in the Pank yesterday, this is a little bit what we have just seen in the green transformation. When CEOs and management teams are not aligning what they know is the future, the likely future, with the valuation, they help pump bubbles. And we know there are winners on the first phase, and there's a lot of losers in the second phase.
And that should bring us to the risks here. And of course, some of the behavior driving this is A, you mentioned monetary policy, but B, free checks, stimulus checks, and then maybe this pandemic creating this the lockdowns and the you only live once mentality. Regardless, just to make people aware of what's driving such extreme moves. A lot of it is the options market, is the derivatives market moving the underlying instrument. That's key to point out. And you get this tremendous leverage, this tremendous so-called gamma effect when you're buying ridiculously out of the money options that are expiring in a matter of a couple of days. And then as the price moves toward higher from all the call option buying, the gamma, that means how much that option is worth, just absolutely explodes. And so let's look at the most traded options contract yesterday. For some reason, there's a 73 weekly call option on a $30 billion stock, which was just a few billion dollar stock a few days ago. I wonder if the regulators need to look at the options market here. In one day, up 2,500 plus percent on a implied vol of 760%. These are just silly, stupid numbers. And of course, on the short side or on the short interest side of this stock, you have 20% of the float short. So the underlying explodes. And then for those that are saying this is ridiculous, it's almost impossible to speculate against it. You can't take the upside risk by shorting calls unless you have extremely deep pockets and you're willing to see that trade go offside by several hundred percent first. If you are trying to speculate simply on a longer term put option, I just put an example in here on the lower right on slide 5. A $50 put expiring in September, it'll cost you $25, meaning you break even if the price collapses to $25 and you cannot realize, first of all, 100% gain because it's slightly above $25. And your max upside on the risk is 100% of your capital risks. That's not the type of risk reward anybody would be looking for there. Yes, of course, you could look for trying to time when this is going to all collapse with a weekly options play. We're spending too much time here on this, but just to be, to paint where the drivers are and where the risks are. Let's get to something. I'll tell you, you're here in the studio. It's not moving by several hundred percent a day, and that would be bull markets. With so much talk of inflation, inflationary pressures. We have oil breaking out now to new highs since 2018. And, it's just hard to find any life in these longer-term bond yields. What's your take here on European yields? We're getting a lot of headlines fairly recently, and now the last couple of weeks we've just kind of gotten bogged down again on yields.
Well, John, very quickly on slide 6, I wanted to put again a graph showing 10 years bond yields. And the reason for that is that yesterday Lagarde was out saying that the ECB is committed to preserve favorable financing conditions. And it caused the yields in the euro area to fall. So although we believe that bond yields in the long term and by the end of the year, they will turn positive and probably will stabilize around 0.6% after the German elections. We have to note that in the short term, if the ECB is particularly dovish, especially at next week meeting, 10 years bond yields can break below minus 0.2% and they will find the support at minus 0.4%. However, I expect then yields to rebound as obviously the European economy is reopening. And also we have tapering talks now hitting off in the US.
Well, when they also indicated, and even in Europe, they indicated they're front loading some of their purchases or maybe some automatic tapering, I guess, that goes on there. But really, I think you're pointing out the key risk here or the key event. As we saw back in 2017, and I'm losing track of which date was which. I think it was April 17 was the French election. Then we had that Italian election in 18, mm-hmm. which caused considerable moves across the. So once again, we're into the politics. It is just so key, that German election. But you also have some issuance coming up here. Is this a big test for the market?
Yeah, I'm just trying to say to our investors that basically they should look at the bond market with kind of a critical eye. And today we have France coming out to the market with 10, 20, 30, and 50 years OATs. So it's going very long on durations. And it will be very important to see how investors are buying into duration. On slide 7, I put a graph of the price of the 50 years OAT. And as you can see, it has fallen 20% since issuance, which was January this year. And there is also something worrying, John. Last week, we talked about this disastrous 15 years Bund auction. And yesterday, Germany issued 5 years bond bonds. So I looked at whether demand was supportive for at least this shorter maturity. But in reality, demand continues to fall. And the bid to cover ratio was the lowest since April last year. And it was well below the average within the past 5 years. So definitely, it seems that there is not much demand for European sovereigns at the moment.
That's very interesting. But it's going to be more interesting if yields finally respond to that. And then speaking of yields, I think Eurodollar and comparative yields between the EU and US, you have Eurodollar really getting bogged down here. And to me, looking like it's lost all momentum, you can see on slide 8. I'm wondering, with all the big macro data coming up, and I'll preview that on the calendar, together with a bit of an inflation discussion with you, I'll tell you later. If those Fed expectations pick up a little bit, I don't think it'll take much to see Eurodollar rolling over for a slightly larger consolidation. But certainly a chart that's lost momentum, and FX in general has really been very quiet recently. Speaking of Fed expectations, look at where we are ahead of all this data. You can see here on slide 9, I've put up a chart of the December 22, so next year, which would track some of the moves in the Fed funds all the way into early 2023, where we are there. And we're actually at the lower end of expectations for Fed moves. And we're exactly at the point right now where we were last November, when the first major vaccine news was announced there in early November, where I put that little red arrow there. So, the market is, we're all talking about the Fed bringing in taper talk, but the actual pricing of actual rate moves is quite modest. And I think it's going to be really key as we look forward to the CPI print that is going to be out and possibly could be the high CPI print of the cycle for the May CPI data out of the U.S. next week, which comes out just ahead of the FOMC meeting the following week. I'm getting a bit ahead of myself, and we need to go back to the equity market here. And actually, this is kind of the start of our inflation talk for the rest of this podcast. I think we have a few slides that are going to talk about this. So Peter, on slide 10, you're talking about the green transformation, and I have another slide here looking at this carbon border tax that you've put in as well on slide 10. What's your focus on this slide?
Yeah, it's basically a spin-off of a lot of conversations we've had, you and I, John, also as we've seen it the last couple of days. And the green transformation have sort of, we started with, nobody really took climate change seriously except for maybe scientists and a few, NGOs, and that it the momentum built. And now, consensus is very much in favor that we need to do something. The green transformation has been a big investment theme. We had, the big returns last year, and the policymakers are just, continuing with a lot of changes to the regulatory framework. We have this EU carbon border tax. I have this headline from the FT. It's 2 weeks old with Russian businesses within metals production, etc., or steel production is really getting hurt from this. And we had the conversation yesterday, John, and I know Steen is very much on board with it, that if we get a lot more inflation, it will come from the green transformation push, because it's such an enormous investment and push that it pushes on the boundaries of our physical supplies of metals, etc. right now, and it takes a long time to expand that supply. We can talk about that. We will have deficits in copper and nickel for a couple of years ahead. And then I was glad to see Larry Fink, the CEO of BlackRock. He's basically saying that he sees a very huge potential for a big shock to financial markets coming from inflation. He says if we choose to go all green too fast, it will create enormous inflation. And that's the whole irony of all of this, is that our pursuit for a green world as fast as possible drive up prices, which will slow down growth and increase inflation. So I think we ultimately will end up doing it, but it will be a very nasty and bumpy road for a lot of people. There will be a lot of suffering, and there will be a lot of the lower part K, as Steen said, will suffer from this. So that perpetuates that governments will do a lot more taxing on the very wealthy and also the wealthy corporations. So there's so many things and dynamics around this green transformation that we cannot cover it in one podcast, I think.
Yeah, that's a key point. The fact that rise in inflation could ironically affect those that they're trying to support at the lower end with a lot of these programs, fiscal cash drops, etc. But the climate policy, very interesting. And I tweeted out an article, and you see on slide 11, or just check our Twitter feed, EU planning a carbon market linked import levy on steel and cement. So in other words, we have, I'm showing the CO2 emissions futures on the right. The price per ton has reached 50 euros. That's $60 plus. And you know, you can't just have this emissions, you know, standards for domestic market, then just you're killing producers. So you just start importing, let's say, Chinese steel and cement. So obviously they're going to try to link up those imports with these climate levies, and that could get very expensive for all cement, steel, aluminum, etc. I did a little math here, by the way. Just a ton of cement takes around, it costs around $125 a ton, and I guess probably less efficient usage of energy inputs creates 600 kilograms of CO2 per ton of cement produced. It's a hugely energy intensive process. So if you're talking about a $60 per ton price, you're adding something like 40% to that price overnight if you suddenly link it to the current carbon emissions price, just for perspective there. Yeah, all this pointing towards inflation. I'll say you've got a point on inflation you've made before about this reach for yield that has been being engaged in to avoid, I guess, being exposed, of course, to zero and negative yielding, certainly European sovereigns. But what's your perspective here on slide 12? And I like your headline there, reflation or stagflation, question mark. Well, either way, it's inflation and the bond market is preparing for it.
Yes, John, I think that the point I want to raise is that tomorrow non-farm payrolls are important for the bond markets. However, if they disappoint or if they surprise, they can indicate either reflation or stagflation. But the common denominator there is that inflation is going to pick up and continue to rise. And the bond market knows that. And as you can see on slide 12, investors are starting to position from that. Quarterly outflow are quite heavy on the TLTs, ETF that invest in 20 plus treasuries. And also we are seeing that also the Federal Reserve is announcing that is going to wind down some credit corporate facility. And it looks like from the graph that you have on slide 12 on the right, that investors are starting to buy quality because the spread between high yield and investment grade has been widening slightly from the previous month, around 17 basis points from 200 to 217. But the reason for that is not that high yield spreads are widening, is that investment grade spreads are tightening. Mm. So it seems that investors now are going back.
Maybe the very first signs of a slight shift in favor of quality. So the market, maybe the market itself starting to tighten a little bit in sympathy with what the Fed is very cautiously starting to signal. Very interesting point there. And I want to follow up on one of your points, but I just wanted to quickly, if there's any earnings comments you wanted to make, Peter, before I jump into the macro stuff.
Yeah, we talked the other day about the JPS, the world's largest meat producer. they were having this cybersecurity attack, and we had the big cybersecurity attack on the pipeline a few weeks ago, in North America, the oil pipeline there. And I think it just puts a lot of focus on CrowdStrike, which is a cybersecurity firm, one of the best ones out there. It's a smaller one, but it's growing extremely fast. It's growing, as you can see, 82% in the last 12 months. They have a strong product that is taking market share, and they will report after the close. I'm very curious to see actually what they say in terms of the outlook and how that relates to the latest events that have happened, because this is definitely getting everyone's attention, and we'll soon be putting out a cybersecurity basket so we can track this industry.
You mentioned baskets there, by the way, and we have to mention that we put in slide 17 today. We get so many questions through our email, marketcall@saxobank.com. On your baskets, what are these? Where can I see the composition? And you've put a helpful slide there on slide 17. Is there anything you want to add to that? I think it's important for folks to look at that for how to access your lists and baskets.
Yeah, so the list we have marked there inside the Saxo Trader platform is basically lists of it. So for the historical performance figures, you will have to tune into my presentation and our podcast to get those. That's where we will present those, and obviously in our research notes as well, of course.
Right, of course. Should mention that was the how to navigate there from the Saxo Trader Go. So I think you, I'll say you brought in something really interesting there. And that is, what if we get, we have an ADP payrolls change as well today ahead of the non-farm payrolls change tomorrow. And I think it's interesting to indicate that, or to bring up the idea that, hey, even if we don't see a very positive number, the meaning of that does not suggest that there's a shortage for demand of labor. It's just that there's not enough folks that are out there willing to fill key positions. And we saw that actually, I mentioned in the ISM manufacturing, the employment subindex was at 50.9. So 50.9, a drop from over 55 in April. And I mentioned that sort of lazily as a sign that that's not good yesterday, but it's key to point out, I mean, looking through the survey itself, you see the anecdotal evidence is that the reason that it was low is they're not going to hire additional people when they're having trouble even getting components to expand production, A, and B, they're having a hard time finding live bodies to put in positions to do the work. So, and that could be the case as well for the ISM services today. I don't know if it's the same kind of skilled positions or not there. There may be a differentiation. So we need to be careful, in other words, how we interpret potentially disappointing data. Of course, very strong data that speaks for itself. That's an obvious indicator. And that's a bit more interesting as well for the implications for the Fed reaction. The Fed is really lost in the desert, if you will, if we're getting the stagflation scenario, the high inflation, but the weak employment. There's no sort of monetary policy setting that helps or addresses that. So very interesting. Those data points, ISM services today, ADP payrolls change today, and then the jobs report tomorrow. How the market interprets that, whether the strong data or weak data, and then the big CPI print, which could be another absurdly high print ahead of the FOMC meeting. You're seeing the week following, and you're seeing comments from the Fed, more comments leaking talking about needing to talk about taper. The Philadelphia Fed's Harker was out indicating that yesterday. So there is a slow shift in their rhetoric, and they're trying to do it as quietly as possible because they know it's going to spook a market that has risen to such heights on the very accommodation they've been providing all along. So I think it's we're in for this very quiet volatility period, maybe picking up a little bit in the coming couple of days here. Let's see how it turns out. And we'll be back tomorrow, of course, with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.